This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You're listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast brought to you by Nottinghamshire Live.
Hello, welcome to Garibaldi Red. Today's episode is with former Forest striker Jason Lee, who you might have seen in the news recently. He's got a new podcast out called The Absolutely Podcast. The first episode is with David Baddiel, where he interviews the former Fantasy Football League host about the sketches that we all know about from the 90s around Jason, the pineapple on his head, even blacking up, and the impact it's had on Jason over the years. They finally meet up and have a very frank conversation about what happened and what's happened since and why it's taken so long for this conversation to take place. So we're going to talk to Jason about that, about his new podcast and about Forest this season. But what I've got is a clip from the podcast just so people get a flavour of it. And then we'll go into the interview with Jason. So here is a flavour of the Absolutely Podcast, the first episode.
It is also definitely part and parcel of me coming to understand how wrong it was what happened to you.
That's usually the case with people.
I know.
Once they've experienced that before, then they've not really got a full understanding of how it can affect other people.
It's interesting and kind of weird how, you know, we have experienced something similar, which is being well known, being on TV, and then having an ethnic identity suddenly means that people can use it against you. The man shouting of Jews at me is doing it because he's seen me on telly and he's seen me talking about being Jewish and feels empowered to do that.
Yeah.
Right. So I completely understand how wrong it was to do that to you, to put you in that position, to make it worse for anyway, for the racists that exist anyway. That's the point.
Yeah.
I make it worse for you. We know that there's racists at football. We then make it worse for you in ways that are incredibly unhelpful and wrong.
Jason, how's it been for you the last few days? You've been in the news quite a lot. Has it been a bit of a whirlwind?
Yeah, social media has been very active. I believe our conversation was trending as well. So a lot of people have kind of taken up that conversation, which is a good thing because, you know, what we're going to be talking about and David Baddiel and the fact that I've launched a podcast was to create that conversation and enable people to have those uncomfortable discussions.
Yeah, I mean, for people who don't know, you've launched a new podcast, Absolutely Podcast, and the first episode is with David Baddiel. And like I say, you've made news around, it's been such a long time coming, the apology from him for the cover, the sketches of you on Fantasy Football League in the 90s. Tell us a bit about the podcast and why you decided to launch it and what the thinking is behind it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, well, lots of people have got podcasts and this, that and the other, and I think it's part of a strategy, really, for me to be able to have these conversations, raise more awareness. I mean, I work in an EDI space, equality, diversity and inclusion space. You know, this is stuff that I do, you know, on a day-to-day basis. I'm very passionate about tackling discrimination. And it just gives me another vehicle, really, to have that conversation and reach more people. So, you know, people that have probably started to recently follow me on social media would have wondered where I've been all this time because I'm new to it. Having conversations with people, speaking to people directly is what I'm about, really. But I understand that you have to engage, you know, for especially on social media, and try and reach more people in that respect. So I'm still kind of coming to terms with having to do that as well.
The first words, I think, on the intro for the podcast is around having those difficult conversations. I think a lot of us, myself included, probably avoid those difficult conversations in real life. And especially with David Baddiel, you are face-to-face. We'll come on to it again, but, you know, it's quite, you know, full-on and upfront. Why did you want to have those difficult conversations? What's the value of that for you?
Well, it had to be had. I mean, people have asked me numerous times over the years. I lose count, and it's such a reoccurring theme that you know, have you seen, have you spoken to, what happens when you do, you know, David Baddiel, Frank Skinner. And the honest answer is, I've never had the opportunity to speak to them directly. Yeah, I mean, I was invited on the show back in the day, but that was never going to happen. That wasn't something that I was interested in. I wasn't going to validate what they was doing. And people have had these conversations really without me being part of it, whether it be on social media or whatever it may be. So, you know, it was important that I kind of claimed some ownership of the situation and invited him into the podcast and sat him down and, you know, try and hold him to account and also give him the opportunity to explain himself. So that was the reason why it had to be done. You know, I enjoy speaking to people. There are going to be some really good guests going forward on the podcast. But speaking to David Baddiel was one of the main things really that I really wanted to unpick.
Do you think there is an Absolutely podcast without what happened to you? Because I guess it's had a huge impact on your life, those sketches, even now, you know, 30 years later, as it almost is. I don't know if scars is the right word, but would the podcast have happened without that impact of what happened to you?
Yeah, maybe, maybe not. I mean, as I said, I work in EDI. I'm very outspoken on a lot of subjects, you know, around football. I'm always called, whether it be TV or radio, and asked to give a response to a latest topic. So I've always had a voice in that respect. It's only been, as I said, social media, which is something that I've consciously kept away from, you know, to try and really maybe to protect my family and this, that and the other, because there's a lot of toxic noise that goes on social media that I could do without, which I'm sure we could all do without. So even that area I spoke at around tackling social media platforms and what they can do to protect people, you know. So I've always been able to have a conversation. So maybe a podcast would have happened anyway. It's an evolution. I think it's something that a lot of people are able to do, and why wouldn't I have done that? But as I said, the David Baddiel situation, having that conversation and being able to take control of it, this gave me an opportunity to do that. Otherwise, it's not a really controlled environment where I'd be, you know, on the forefront. I'd imagine we would have spoken on his terms. So that's not something that I was keen to do.
What has your opinion changed of David Baddiel coming out of it? Because I watched the interview. You don't let him off the hook at all. And I'll put a link in the comments for people to check out. It's well worth watching. It's quite uncomfortable watching at times, which I guess is a good thing. Has your opinion of David changed coming out of it?
Well, firstly, it's important that people watch, you know, and it is a plug at the end of the day, but I did it for a reason. I didn't do it for people to get bite-sized information from the podcast. They need to watch the interview in its full entirety. There's a conversation being had. There's learnings to be had from that conversation. I do stuff, you know, restorative justice with people. I'm working with people all the time who maybe do and say and make mistakes. So if people make mistakes, you need to afford them an opportunity to try and rectify that, right? So, you know, we can continue to keep battering people. But, you know, if someone says they want to apologise, well, at least afford them the opportunity to do that. So it's important that people see the whole conversation and they can make their own mind up as to, you know, what they want to take from it. But for me, it was important to be able to sit there, stare him in the eye, look at his body language and try and take something from it, you know, for myself and also for him to take away and maybe learn from as well.
What do you hope? I mean, you touched on it a little bit there, but what do you hope the viewer takes away from it?
A lot of people might have a little bit more understanding as to what I'm trying to say in terms of, because there's always been that maybe that era where people may level and say, you know, you're being oversensitive, or it's just a joke, or it's just this, it's just that. So you're kind of diminishing or minimizing something that somebody's saying, myself and so many other people that have been impacted by it over the years, that it doesn't really matter and it's not important. Well, it does matter and it is important, and it affected so many people. You know, take myself out of it. The people that have contacted me over the years, and it's flooding through at the moment, I'm not going to lie. There's so many people saying, look, you don't realise this affected me when I went to school. You know, I've got children. I have had to deal with this. It's a big subject for a lot of people. And the fact that he's apologised to myself, you know, other people still feel like, well, okay, but they're still having to deal with the after effects of, you know, that period of time. So I'm very sympathetic to what people, you know, feel about it. People can see it for themselves. They can judge for themselves. But as I said, it's a learning. I work with people all day, every day. Anybody that's open-minded to have these conversations, I'm happy to work with you. If you're too far gone and you don't really want to engage and you don't want to have these conversations, then, you know, good luck with it. I haven't got time to waste with you, but I get the feeling that there's an appetite for people to, especially coming out of the pandemic and a George Floyd scenario where people was having these conversations, you know, family and friends were having them at home as well. So I do believe that there is an appetite for this conversation to be had.
True. I assume everyone who's watching this knows what we're talking about in terms of the sketches with the laying into your haircut, which I'm sure I know you're proud of from watching it, and also, you know, blacking up basically at the time. But I'm sure everyone knows about that. I mean, are you, I know you had the conversation with David for doing it. What's your attitude like to Forest fans who embraced it at the time? Because, you know, 12-year-old me, I laughed at it, and now, to my, you know, I regret that now. But what about the Forest fans at the time who embraced it? What are your feelings towards them?
I think it's good to hear you say you regret it now. So that just shows that there are some learnings from it, because if I didn't point it out to people numerous times that I wasn't happy with it and I'm uncomfortable with it, and it's been impactful and hurtful to so many people, you wouldn't have come to that realization, would you? You would have still thought maybe it was a joke and there's no harm done. And so it's not about just sitting there and saying, get on with it. I just take it and people can do whatever they want. Forest fans were always very supportive of me. And it gets conflated and it gets really confusing and people don't really understand it. Forest fans would have sang that song in support of me. I understood that. I had this conversation with many, many fans. But you could tell the hostility from the away support. So if the away fans are singing it, they're not saying it in support of me. You know, we understand that they're saying it in the most negative terms possible. And playing away from home would always be very uncomfortable. So if I scored or if I performed, of course I understand the Forest fans are getting behind me. I just wish the song never existed, to be perfectly honest. There was always going to be stick. So it's not as if I don't understand, I didn't develop that resilience. Before, during and after, I've always had to deal with some sort of abuse. You know, it is what it is. It's part and parcel of trying to be a footballer. And also, you know, being somebody of a minority ethnic group, that you feel that you are under pressure and that you do face certain stereotypes. So it's not me being oversensitive. It's complex, it's deep. You know, there's colorism involved. We're talking about black facing. We're talking about the culture and the hair and how impactful and how important it is to the black community. As I said, I was very proud of my dreadlocks. And, you know, it just wasn't a comfortable situation. It wasn't a comfortable period of my life. And, you know, for my family and friends to have to deal with it, that's hurtful, because you can't protect them. You're trying to worry about yourself. And any footballer or anybody that's dealing with it can tell you that they're trying to deal with their own emotions. But going onto a field of play and worrying about your family and friends and how they're going to react to it is always another concern, something else that, you know, you're having to deal with, which you could really do without.
Did you think of shaving your hair at the time, like you have now, or would that be giving in and letting them win, in a sense?
I was stubborn. I was stubborn at the time. There was always going to come a time where I would cut my hair, and you know, during that season, to give people context, I mean, you said you was a 12-year-old at the time, so that makes me feel old, doesn't it? There's people watching that wouldn't have the full, you know, understanding of it. You know, I started at Charlton Athletic, who was in the first division back in the day, which is the Premier League now. I left that club at 19 and went to Lincoln in the fourth division. That was my learning curve, you know, close to 100 games playing in the fourth division at 19. I then got a move back to which is what now is the Championship, with Southend. I was only there 7 months. You know, I came to Nottingham Forest, who just got relegated out of the Premier League into the Championship. We won promotion back to the Premier League. I was now playing in the Premier League. There was no pineapple chance or anything. It wasn't on the radar then. It was only when I was playing regularly in the Forest first team, you know, leading the line in Europe, scoring goals, that it brought me to the attention of obviously this TV show. And they felt that, you know what, here's something we can go in. They was mocking footballers, I get that. But they went to a whole new level with myself. So it only happened because of the fact that I was actually doing well in the first place. But when people want to talk about it, it's usually a negative conversation, as if, you know, you've clowned me for getting, you know, the things that I have achieved in my career, having played at the highest level, having worked hard to get there, having won promotion, you know, with four different clubs, played across all levels. I look back on my career with a lot of pride. So I have to remind myself sometimes that, come on, I have to have this conversation with people who have not done the homework or research but all they know is, all they can reference is David Baddiel and you had a pineapple on your head. Well, I'm like, no. I had dreadlocks, which I tied up to play a game of football, and I was a Premier League player. There's more to it than that. But, you know, listen, people don't take the time, do they, to listen to the whole story or get the whole context of a conversation. And that's where we go wrong. People just jump in and there's a pile on because people maybe have seen and heard some sound bites. So that's why I think it's important for people to watch the podcast, listen to the full conversation, and then come to their own conclusions.
Obviously, we're having this conversation now and society's evolved. At the time, did you wish Forrest or your teammates or anyone had given you a bit more support or reached out to the show and said, you know, this is out of order? Could a lot more have been done with hindsight?
We just wasn't in that time space. People wasn't looking to support anybody, you know, especially in a sporting or a football context. Nobody was saying, like speaking out like they are now with social media. You know, players have got a platform, and I always encourage players to politicize themselves and speak about things that are passionate to them. We didn't have that same platform in those days. We could do maybe an interview after a game. You're talking about a football match and a performance. That would probably be the end of it. No one was really asking you for an opinion on anything else, and you didn't really have the platform to do that. So I don't blame anybody. You know, my manager, Frank Clark, at the time was supportive. My teammates were supportive. It was surreal for me to be in that storm. You know, it's like an out-of-body experience. You know what's going on, but you're still trying to perform and go and do what you can to support your team and go and put in a performance. So it's like anything else. You don't really want to show anybody that you're under duress or you're suffering, especially in a sporting context, because you feel that that can be used against you. You know, people might say, well, you know, you're not in a fit state to go and play football. So I needed to play. I wanted to play. The best place for me was on the field to play, playing football and trying to do something positive to say, look, there you go. That's what I'm about. And also silencing a lot of people who might be giving me abuse. So for me to go and score, you know, Ellen Road or whatever it may be, for me to go and score a goal or a winning goal, I felt like I had the last say on that day.
What are you making of the World Cup on a tangent then? You talk about players having, you know, that platform now with social media and obviously on the biggest stage. So many issues around Qatar. What's your view of it as a former player in the work you do today?
First and foremost, you know, really frustrating to hear that FIFA adopted the stance that they was going to fine or they was going to impose, you know, bookings or yellow cards on players, i.e. the captains, you know, if they chose to wear the armbands. I think that needs looking at. You know, I think people need to push back and say or question how FIFA could actually do that at this late stage, and also preventing people walking into the stadium with anything, you know, rainbow coloured, whether it be hats or whatever it may be. I mean, I'm hearing stories of people being stopped and being told to remove certain items of clothing. So I think that's going too far. You know, at the end of the day, we're talking about being all inclusive. Why are you worried about what somebody wears and where they wear it? So yeah, players, I think for players, you know, it's a difficult one for them. You know, players have waited 4 years or longer to go and play in a tournament and then to get caught in the eye of the storm where now they're being spoken to on so many levels by so many people. You know, they want to do the right thing morally. Then they're being told maybe by the manager or I mean, the FA have tried to support the players. It sounds like they're trying to support the players. They said they was prepared to take a fine. But when it comes to, you know, a very prominent player, your captain, maybe being on a booking before he's kicked a ball and you realise that you may well need that player further down the line, that's a different conversation, right? So it's not an easy one. I think people are very judgmental to say that, you know, players should just take the booking. How will fans feel if you're missing a Harry Kane or somebody else further down the line because he's picked up a couple of bookings and that booking is the one that's carried him over? Mm. You know, you can't have it both ways in that respect. So not an easy conversation. But again, that's why we talk about it. You know, I think it's important that if they've not got a voice to talk about it, that we talk about it. I think, you know, FIFA bang out of order. That's my view on it. I think they needed to allow players and people to have their voice at the end of the day, you know, especially on such a big stage.
Just looking at the work you do today, then, can you tell viewers, is it Are you going into classrooms? Are you going into football clubs? Are you working with people one-to-one? What kind of stuff do you actually do these days?
All of the above, really. Predominantly, I work with players. Okay, so it's about educating players, you know, EDI workshops, keeping them up to speed, which is great, don't get me wrong. The work needs to be done with coaches and managers and directors and people that sit on the boards and people that come and watch the games. And it needs to happen across all industries, you know, all organisations need to have these conversations. So I'm prepared to have that with as many people as possible and work not only in football, but outside of football as well. That's the work. So when I say I'm doing the work and people need to keep doing the work, you know, we all work for a company. You know, there should be CPD or, you know, you can call it whatever you want. There should be cultural awareness. There's, you know, your HR department should be in tune, working with the EDI department. You know, if you've got one, if you've got an equality officer, whoever it may be that works for your company. And you need to ensure that annually, at least annually, that people are having training that upskills them, because terminology and words and that is evolving and changes all the time. Things that we found acceptable years ago are not acceptable now. So ignorance is not an excuse for people. I think people claim ignorance, don't they, and say, well, I didn't know and no one told me. Well, let's alleviate that by ensuring people have the training regularly. And maybe we can prevent some of the problems going forward. Just be proactive and not reactive.
Are there days when you get home to that room and sit at your computer and...
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You banging your head against the wall still, or do you feel like you're making progress in the right direction?
These conversations can be extremely taxing mentally. So sometimes I'm fatigued, you know, I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I'm not in a good frame of mind. You've got to look after your well-being as well. Some of these conversations where you're trying to fight against discrimination and try and support people, and then you're going up against what can feel like, especially like the social media companies, you know, I've tried to take on the social media companies. I've had meetings with, you know, big companies and sat in their offices and said, like, what are you doing to address, you know, the emojis and the toxic, you know, the toxic language that's just outpouring on your platforms? And you just feel like, well, you've got no chance, or it's very difficult to be impactful and get them to actually listen to what you're saying. It's only when you've got large swathes of people that can support you. I think we all suffer with a lot of the things we're talking about. You're not on your own. You know, we've got children, we've got young people. You've got people that are, you know, self-harming because of social media, whatever it may be. So I'm going off on a tangent, but I think you get the point I'm making, is that there's a lot of work to be done with as many people as possible. So I wouldn't box myself in and limit myself just to football or just to players.
Does your football career, obviously we've got a lot of personal experience that you're talking about, but your career as a player, you've managed as well. I remember my first job was covering Dunedin. I'm sure you were the Boston United manager at the time. Yeah. Do you take a lot from that in terms of communicating with people?
I think it certainly helps. I think sometimes it may well open a door if people realise that, oh, you know, you played football. There's a conversation to be had about football. People support teams, don't they? Lots of people are interested in football. So that's always a conversation. I talk football all day, every day with everybody. Everyone's got an opinion on football, so I don't mind that. But if that's the door that opens for what I believe are the more important conversations, then, you know, great. So no, I use it to my advantage. And I'm sure people, you know, can identify with somebody who wants to do that or has also maybe had a successful career as well. So no, I think it goes hand in hand.
Forest, your club now still? You say, I know you're there a lot, but do they feel like your club at heart now?
Well, you say now. I mean, they've always been. I mean, listen, I'm from the East End of London. I'm an Arsenal fan, so I get involved in these conversations as well. But Forest are my club. You know, people assume that I'm from Nottingham. People assume that I started at Nottingham Forest, because I'm synonymous with the club. So I not only played there, and I only played there for 3 years, so people assume that I was there for a longer period of time, but I lived in Nottingham for 25 years. I no longer live in Nottingham, but my kids were brought up in Nottingham. So whilst I was travelling and playing to all these teams, you know, up and down the country, our life was in Nottingham. So it's been a good city. It's been good to me. It was only until the latter stage of my career when I was 35 that I had the opportunity to then play for Notts County and be back in Nottingham and not have to do the commute to wherever I was going. So, you know, the city's been good to me. And I've got an ambassadorial role at the club. I go to as many home games as possible. I do media, I do hospitality. I coach there. You know, it's great to see Worrell, Yates, Tyler Walker. I could name lots. I mean, I worked with these young guys in the academy. It's great to see these young men going on to play for the club and do really well. I mean, you feel that you've had a small part to play in some of their development. So, and they're great human beings as well, really good people. So really good club. I delivered educational programs for them. I worked in the community. I sit on the Community Trust board. My attachment to the club is there. You know, I'm trying to support them with their EDI strategy across all areas of the organisation. So, yeah, I'm very heavily involved with Nottingham Forest. And I went down recently to watch the Arsenal game, the Forest-Arsenal game. I went down on the bus with the Forest fans. I said, Arsenal on my team, and they won the game. I didn't want to see Forest get battered. 1-0 would have been enough for me. You know, Arsenal top of the table. And I don't want to see Forest get hurt because I know how impactful or you know, how damaging that could have been. But to see Forest bounce back and have such a great week going into the World Cup just shows that, you know, the manager and the coaching staff and the players, you know, they're fully committed and they haven't given up. And I think that's given everybody the belief that you know, coming back after the World Cup situation, that we may well have a chance of, and I say we, you see, we may well have a chance of avoiding relegation because the spirit's there. And, you know, we just need to ensure that we've got a team that's collectively, you know, there's some cohesion and you only get that with time, and the manager's working on the training ground with those players. So it's really good to see that the club had a really good week, and hopefully we can build on that when, you know, the World Cup's finished.
Was it the Brentford game where there's that video of yourself, Mark Crossley, Nigel Jempson celebrating the goal? I'm right, aren't I?
It was the Brentford game. So at the start of a good week, and I don't know. I kind of moved from one area of the stadium to basically alongside the pitch side, and Gemma and Crosley was the, Mark Crosley, our teammate, was the VIP guest on that day. So we'd done some work with him, you know, interviewing him in and around different areas. And I just had a feeling that we was going to get that equalising goal as well, as you do. So you start filming the end of it. Yeah, it captured it well. Gemma's jumping around like a lunatic and Big Norm's there, and it just shows you how much it means to a lot of people, current and former players. We still got that buzz and that energy, and we want to see the team do well. So to experience that and express your feelings, I think, with the fans, I think that's the good thing about football, is that there is a collective. When things are great, things are incredible, right? When things are not so good, then it could be, you know, that reverse effect. But yeah, that was the game, Brentford, and I think we captured it well.
What's the energy like around the club compared to when, you know, you came up and you finished third? Is there that real buzz around the club, just like there was back then, do you think?
I think it's different. I think the difference being back, you know, when I was playing for Forest, I knew the history behind the club, and Forest was considered to be a big club. Let's be honest. They were playing top flight football, going to Wembley regularly, you know, won the European Cup twice. You know, we went on the European Cup run as well. There was a lot of expectancy. And there's always been that expectancy with Forest. I've always, all the years that we've been there, the 23 years that Forest fans have been, you know, obviously having to endure the wilderness and not being in the Premier League, there's always been that expectancy that we're a big club. And it just shows you how football moves on, that there are these big clubs with vast fortune. You know, they're bigger than football clubs now. And if Forest can stay in the Premier League, then they'll have a chance to maybe build the brand globally and bigger. Because there's always that fan base around the world. You go anywhere and people say, oh, Robin Hood, Brian Clough, you know, you play for Forest. And they said they've got an understanding. There is a really big following. But for the younger generation, you know, when I was coaching and doing stuff in the communities, when you're speaking to young people and looking at them, you're talking about football, they didn't quite understand how big Forest was. It's like, well, they've never seen Forest play in the Premier League. You've got this young, new group of fans who are now coming in and not jumping on the bandwagon, but, you know, young people are going to support the teams that are doing really well, right? So it wouldn't have been easy to support Nottingham Forest when, you know, they're playing League One and they got, you know, dropped down a few divisions. But, you know, the history behind the club has always been there, and hopefully the club can, you know, keep building, stay in the Premier League. I mean, that's the key to it all. If you stay in the Premier League, you can build some, you know, some more infrastructure in and around what you're trying to do and be more sustainable, and then the club can keep growing from, you know, from strength to strength. I know that there's an extremely ambitious owner, and the players and the manager and everybody in the club, everyone wants to do well.
I want to get your take before I let you go on one of the players in Taiwo Awoniyi, who's probably the only physical presence up front. I know, I appreciate he probably plays the game slightly differently to you did, to the way you did, but he's kind of the one the ball's meant to stick to. He's making that step up from the Bundesliga without trying to be disrespectful to them. What have you made of him so far, and what do you hope there is to come from him?
Yeah, I've had this conversation, and I like Sturridge. I'm not going to lie. You say he's the only one. I think Sturridge offers that physicality as well. They're both similar size. You know, I've stood next to the pair of them. Yeah, we're similar in stature. We're different. You know, I was a number nine who was used to playing with his back to goal and would work to bring other players into the game. When I was younger, like probably their age, you've got more mobility and you do run the channels and, you know, you're moving around. Listen, all I can say is if I was working with either of those, I would love the opportunity. But listen, I'm not coaching. I'm not going out on the cold anymore. That's not for me. But I've done work with strikers before. You want the ball to stick. So whether it's Taiwo or Sam, you want them to obviously look after the ball. Look after the ball. Give other players an opportunity to build, because especially in the Premier League, with the counter-attack and the way teams break very, very quickly, if the ball doesn't stick for, you know, a little period of time, you just can't get out. Forest are good on the break. Championship level, you know, we showed how good we was. And it's just that final third, that cutting edge, being able to get up there, score a goal quickly, you know, will give us a chance of, you know, listen, scoring goals is the hardest thing in football. And obviously keeping a clean sheet at the other end. But if you're not keeping the ball for a long period of time, then the ball will come back and you will fold under pressure. So I like both of them. You know, Taylor's got 3 goals. I've liked what Sturridge has done when he's been impactful, when he's come off the bench, you know, especially this last week. He showed what he's all about. I can remember when I was on the bench, and I know Steve Cooper talked about them being finishers, you know, impact players. So his terminology in a way he looks at it, because sometimes being a substitute is not easy. You know, you don't want to be on the bench. But can you make sure you're impactful when you come on? You need to make a change. You need to add something to the team. So if their attitude's right and they're young players that continue to work, I think there's the making of 2 very good young strikers there. They just need to work on, as I said, if they're going to be the focal point of Forest attack, ensuring that they look after the ball and that we're able to get other players to go and join them.
Do you think I've been guilty there of that kind of Championship, I don't know, prejudice isn't the right word, bias, but I've kind of overlooked Sam because Taiwo is the one who's coming into the club record signing with the bigger expectations. Is Sam a bit, I don't know, is underrated the right word maybe, perhaps?
See, this is what happens. I can definitely understand and sympathise with Sam. So he's extremely frustrated. I've seen him, I've spoken to him. He wants to play his part. When you bring in players, invariably the focus is on the new players, especially if they're record signings and they cost a lot of money. You know, back in my day, you know, players were coming in left, right and centre, whether it be Andre Silenzi, Kevin Campbell. You know, these are big, big money signings. I wasn't a big money signing. So instantly you feel that, wow, I'm dropping down the pecking order here without really having an opportunity to go and do what you want to do. So, but Sam has to keep his head and ensure that, you know, forget all the fact that, you know, Taiwo's cost more money and he's a record signing. When he's given an opportunity, just go and grasp it. Go and grasp it. Go and just keep proving to people he's good enough. He's an excellent finisher. Excellent, excellent finisher. That young man can finish. He's got great attributes. He's got a good attitude. So they're both going to be needed. If one's not doing the work, I mean, sometimes you might want to play the 2 of them up there as well, because they're a handful. You know, they can be a handful and occupy the centre halves. What you don't want is defenders to have an easy day, you know, and have a fag on and just have a stroll and not be under duress and under pressure. You need to ensure that defenders feel a little bit nervous and under pressure. And I think they can do that. So, no, I think they're both good players. And, you know, you've mentioned the fact that, you know, you've seen him in the Championship and maybe you feel that he's not Premier League, but they've all got something to prove at Premier League. Even the bigger name players that have come in, they're not established Premier League players. They need to go and show, other than Jesse Lingard, who's played Premier League football at the highest level, the rest of the squad, the rest of the players, they're all unproven.
You obviously retain a great passion for the game, listening to you now. Are you done with coaching and management, or do you think maybe one day you might get back in?
Yeah, I'm done. I've been tempted. I've been asked so many times over the years. It's been 10 years or so since I really was out there regularly coaching. I'm still in and around the games. I go to a game, you know, most weekends or during the week. That's enough for me. I mean, I think you have to give people an opportunity. It's not easy to be a coach or a manager. You know, you're out of work more than you're in work. That can be the case. And I was fortunate enough, well, not fortunate, but I ensured that I was thinking about other things. I always speak to coaches and managers, people that want to go into the game and say, look, you need to have outside interests and passions just in case it doesn't work out. And you need to ensure that when you're out of work, you've still got something you can do with yourself. So if you put that in place, then you give yourself options. There's nothing worse than being a coach or a manager and being out of work for a long period of time and stressing and hoping that you get that call. There's just not enough jobs, especially for a manager. There's just not enough opportunities. So, no, as much as I enjoyed it, it was really good. I really enjoyed being player manager and a manager at Boston. You just realise that, you know what, there's other things I could do in my life. So, yeah, you move on.
Tell us how people can find the podcast. I assume it's on every platform. And also, when's it coming out and what kind of people have you got coming up on it?
Well, you know the podcast is out, right?
So when you the David Deal one. Yeah, the first one. Yeah, I've watched it.
You can find that on, well, anywhere that you watch your pods, you know, whether it be Spotify, Acast, it can be YouTube. I'm probably missing one or two, but I don't know where you watch it. Apple, yeah. You know, you can watch it anywhere, to be fair. We've done well in ensuring that it's across all platforms. I don't know if I want to give away what's coming next. I mean,
Is it weekly or is it fortnight? Is it monthly?
No. We'll wait and see. We'll drip feed it. We'll see how far this one goes first before we... Obviously, we're going into the Christmas period. We'll look at, you know, some more guests and start putting a few, you know, we've done a few, to be fair, and they'll come out if and ready. It's timing's everything, right? So I'm working with people that understand it better than me, you know, when to release stuff. So I don't want to give too much away, but yeah, anybody can go and watch it. You can find it. I've got a webpage as well. Obviously, I'm on the socials. You know, if you want to keep in touch, you want to see what I'm up to, that can be found.
It's, I mean, like I say, the David Badil one's quite full on. Do you actually enjoy the whole process of doing these podcasts?
Do you?
I doing this, yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
yours is so live chat football most of the time.
Yeah, why not? Listen, it's talking. It's not difficult, is it? We enjoy speaking. Obviously, we enjoy conversing with people, and you get to speak to some really interesting people. You know, it's not just about me. There's going to be some interesting people that come on your pod and on my pod. And you want to hear from them, right? It's about giving them an opportunity to speak and share and deep diving into some of the stuff that you might not have known about them before. So, you know, you've done well with the questions today, speaking to myself. You know, maybe there's something that I can learn when I'm doing my own as well. Listen, it's just about having a way, isn't it? And giving somebody, making them feel comfortable, which you've done, and giving them the opportunity to speak. And it's about the difficult conversation. So it's not always going to be, you know, all fun and games. I mean, obviously the first one was quite intense in that respect. And there will be humour, and there is humour. But, you know, what can we achieve? What can we... You don't have long, really, with people, do you, to try and get to the bottom of what they're about. So... You know, we'll always tackle, as you did today, asking about Qatar. You'll always speak about what's relevant and what, you know, what people really want to hear about. I think that's important as well. So, no, we're not going to avoid anything. I just hope people enjoy it. You know, I enjoy doing the podcast, speaking to people, going on their podcasts, having these conversations. So, and clearly, podcasts are something that people have got an appetite for because there are so many. You know, it's obviously is the one. It's easy listening when people are driving or whatever it may be, or just going before bed to just put on a podcast. And yeah, so they obviously work.
Last question, a very difficult one, putting you on the spot. Where are Forest going to finish in the Premier League come the end of the season?
We are going to finish fourth or fifth bottom. How about that?
I'll take it. If the numbers are 17 or above, I think I'll take that, definitely. No, I agree. I think
we've got that. We can do that. You know, just beat the teams that you think you can beat in and around you. Everything else is a bonus. The home, obviously, the home form needs to improve in terms of results. It needs to be a fortress, and the fans need to just keep doing what they've been doing, which is The atmosphere at home and away games has been incredible. When obviously all the goals go in against City and Arsenal, it's not easy. I understand that. And ship far too many goals. But the atmosphere, the fans have been brilliant. And they need to enjoy it. They, you know, everyone, you've earned it. So, you know, don't get too disheartened, too fed up when the team's losing games. You know, you've worked hard to get there, so just make the most of it.
Right, we shall leave it there. Thanks to everyone who's watched along. Hope you enjoyed it. So we've had Martin O'Neill, Matt Ford, Jason, and I've recorded two more. Really enjoyed them, and I've got one more lined up before we get back to the action of the Premier League. So hopefully everyone's enjoying them as we go along. Jason, thanks so much, and good luck with the podcast. As you say, it is fun, and I'm sure people will enjoy it as well. But thanks so much for your time today.
No, you're welcome, Matt. Listen, have a good day and enjoy the football.
Yes, yes. Same to everyone. Enjoy the football, enjoy your week, and we shall see you soon.
Thank you for listening to Garibaldi Red, a Nottingham Forest podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode. Thanks for listening.